Welcome to the program, The Spirituality of the Catholic Church, as Father Paul Keenan teaches on God and man in the Catechism of the Catholic Church. And now, Father Paul Keenan.
Hello, I'm Father Paul Keenan. I work in the Office of Communications of the Archdiocese of New York, and it's a pleasure for me to be back with you once again to talk about the spirituality of the Catholic Church and the spirituality of the Catechism of the Catholic Church. You know, we are talking at this point about the commandments, and we're looking at them in a very special way, because when someone asked Jesus, "What must I do to inherit eternal life?" Jesus pointed him in the direction of the commandments. He said, "They'll tell you exactly what to do." So the church turns us in exactly that same direction, in the direction of the commandments. And we looked at the first three commandments, which direct us toward God and toward our love of God. And then we began to look at the commandments that direct us toward our neighbor and how to give our neighbor what is due to him. Because, as it says on the coat of arms of John Cardinal O'Connor, there can be no love without justice. And so if justice is giving to everyone what is due to him or her, then that is really the best definition of love as well. So we're looking at the fourth and fifth commandments. We talked about those yesterday, or last time. And we want to talk now about the sixth commandment, which is, "Thou shalt not commit adultery." Every man and woman should be acknowledged and should acknowledge and accept his sexual identity. The Catechism says that every man and woman should acknowledge and accept his sexual identity. Difference and complementarity are oriented toward the goods of marriage. And really that says it all. The marriage, when we spoke of the sacrament of matrimony earlier on in this series, we said that this was an image of the love that the persons of God have for each other and that God has for us. And we know that the church is considered to be the bride of Christ, and so are we as members of the church considered to be the bride of Christ. And so the sixth commandment is simply an acknowledgement of the fact that human sexuality is meant to be an expression of the love of God, and it's meant to be done within the context of the sacrament of matrimony. And everything really about the sexual act is to be ordered toward that. Our differences, our complementarities, everything about ourselves is to be ordered toward the goods of marriage. And that means basically promoting our own unity, the unity of husband and wife within the marriage, doing everything we can to promote our own love, and at the same time, doing whatever we can to promote the love of our children for us and for each other, and also bringing children into the world. So it's a wonderful gift, this gift of marriage. It continues the wonderful work of love, and it continues the wonderful work of keeping the universe alive. And this commandment, I think, stresses, we've been talking about how these commandments give legs to the things that we believe and that we celebrate in our liturgies, and I think this is a perfect example, because this sixth commandment really gives us the direction that we need to go with the sacrament of matrimony, helping us to utilize the differences that there are, the differences between men and women, and utilizing those differences in the way God means us to. Now, that can say a great deal, I think, not only about the difference between men and women, the difference between males and females, but I think it can speak about the differences that come up in terms of our married relationship as well. Because those differences are the things that will either make us or break us. They are the things that will either give spice and enrichment to our marriage. They'll be the challenges that we have, or there will be the things that bring us down. And in all too many cases, especially right now in the United States, the divorce rate is about 50%, and that's a real tragedy, because it means people are not using their differences to bring them together. They're using their differences to bring them apart. And I mentioned earlier that in my archdiocese, something that has really been almost miraculous in it's the first year in which it's existed, is an approach to the restoration of marriages that are in trouble, which says that if only one of the two partners is committed to saving the marriage can be saved. And I know that at least five marriages have been saved and restored in the course of this year alone, because of the fidelity of one partner, coming faithfully to meetings, working faithfully at the relationship, even when a year ago there was nothing going on from the other side. So it tells us a great deal, doesn't it? Because we hear so much about how impossible this commandment is to keep. It tells us that, our society is constantly reminding us that marriage is something that you can throw away when the going gets tough. It tells us that, well, of course, God understands when there are irreconcilable differences and so forth. But it seems to me that we as a church, as much as we need to minister to people who are divorced, and as much as we need to be compassionate toward them and not isolate them or make them feel like second-class citizens, I think, nonetheless, we need to be much, much more proactive in the Catholic Church today in terms of helping couples to keep their marriages good if they're good, and in helping couples to get their marriages back on track if they're floundering. We really need to be working at that, because my goodness, without our marriages and without our families, where are we? Where are we going to be? If we continue to have a shortage of vocations, then we continue to have a shortage of marriages that last, then where are we? Where are we going to be? And I think that if we can get our priests to be cognizant of what it means to be close to God, and that our vocation comes from Him, and that in our times of discouragement, our solace comes from Him, and if we can get our priests close to thinking along those lines, and if we can get our married couples close to thinking that in their difficulties, Christ is there helping them to come closer together and to fulfill the dreams and fulfill the hopes that He called them to on the day they were married, then I think we'll be in much better shape. That's what we really need to be doing. We really need to be thinking, I think, very, very positively about both the priesthood and about marriage, because God intends them to survive. God intends them to last. And if we get to a point in our culture when we are simply giving up on them and we are simply saying, I don't think we can do it, it's too difficult and too hard, then I think we have really lost something that's very sacred and very important and very wonderful for our lives. Now, in talking about the sixth commandment, the catechism also speaks about homosexuality, and we do need to say a word about that, because the catechism stresses here that in terms of homosexuality, that we believe in the plan of God that marriage is the intention that God had for the use of human sexuality, and that's the orientation that He had in mind for human sexuality. But we realize that there are many people out there who are homosexuals who are nonetheless in their lives seeking God, and we say to them that it is our firm belief that human sexuality is meant to be a gift of God for couples in a sacramental marriage, and we say that very honestly. Nonetheless, having said that, we recognize that people who find themselves to be homosexual nonetheless are often enough searching for God and are just as oriented toward God and made in the image and likeness of God as all the rest of us are, and that we want to work with them and be a church for them and be a mother to them and be helpful to them, even though we ask that they respect and follow what we believe to be what God intends about the use for sexuality only within a sacramental marriage. under no circumstances, and this is in the Catechism, and under no circumstances does the Church ever, ever, ever condone the bashing of homosexuals or people doing anything to ridicule them, to hurt them, to harm them, to slander them in any way. And often enough, I live in New York, and often enough there, we have had experiences in which the Church has been accused of putting down or hurting homosexuals, or times that we have been invited to do that. And John Cardinal O'Connor, at every opportunity that he has to say it, has said very honestly that we never participate in anything that is going to amount to the denigration of another human being, heterosexual, homosexual, or anybody else. And the Catechism really stresses that and really says it right out, that we do ask that people who are homosexuals share our belief that that human sexuality is to be used within the context of sacramental Christian marriage, but at the same time we want to minister to them, we want to be a church for them, and we want to help them find their way to God, and never under any circumstances do we condone those people who want to harm homosexuals in any way. And we deplore any kind of violence against them or any kind of abuse of them as human beings. That is simply deplorable to us, because they too are made in the image and likeness of God. The Catechism speaks also about the gift that a child is to a human family. And I think that's a very good thing for us to hear, because you would almost think the way our culture, the way our society talks about children, is that they are a burden to people, that they're an economic burden, that they're a financial burden, that they're a psychological burden. And I think on a day-to-day basis, I think parents do experience the financial strain that children can be, and the psychological burdens and the limitation. You're not as free to go places and do things when you have children as you were before you had them. And I think that's just a fact of life. But what I find is that in families that are really, really living as true families, and in the sense that God intended, they don't focus on the burdens, they focus on the gifts, and never do they say to their children or imply to their children in any way that they are a burden. Rather, what they do is focus on how can we help these wonderful little human beings to come alive and to find their gifts and to use their gifts. And they work very, very closely with their children to help them in the struggle to come alive, to help them in the struggle to find their way, to become authentic and wonderful human beings. And the Catechism speaks of a gift that a child is. And that really is so true. Every child, every human being is a very special gift. And the privilege that it is to allow a child to grow up in your midst and to get to know a child, even when they're impossible and difficult and hard, it's a wonderful gift that God gives us, to entrust a life to us in that way and to say to us, I believe that you are the kind of person who can help another person come alive and understand what it means to be human and understand what it means to give and to live in society and to be a Christian and a Catholic. It's a wonderful thing. It's a wonderful privilege and gift. And I would like more and more of our parents to come to realize that this is a tremendous gift that God has given them, and to see it that way, to see their children not as burdens, not as limits on their freedom, but as abilities to, or opportunities really, to express what we said that freedom was earlier on. Remember, we said that freedom is the ability to love, and love is the ability to focus on the good of another person. Boy, there's no place where you do that more, I think, than when you're a parent. And any of us who have known parents who have been really good parents have known that, yes, it's a sacrifice, and yes, it's hard, and yes, there are a lot of days when it isn't any fun, but just as the Lord never gives up on us, we try never to give up on our children and to burden them, but rather we try to look for ways in which they can really learn to find their place on earth and to grow as human beings. And I think that's just all a part of life, and it's all a part of what the Sixth Commandment is about. Because really, when it comes right down to it, the Sixth Commandment is about remaining faithful, just as God is faithful. The Seventh Commandment is about stealing, or rather not stealing. Thou shalt not steal. And again, this is part of justice. This is part of giving to everyone what is due to them. The Catechism speaks of the universal destination and private ownership of goods, that that goods are something that are for the whole human race, and that God has created everything for our good, and that he has put in his divine design, in his grand plan, the desire that the goods of the human race be there in an equitable manner for everybody. And we should respect the goods of others and respect the integrity of creation. And that's really the essence of the social doctrine of the church, that while the goods of the earth are for everybody, we do have the right of private ownership, and that private ownership of goods gives us the responsibility to, number one, use the goods themselves the way they are intended to be used, but number two, it gives us the responsibility of making sure our neighbor has all that he needs in order to be able to live and to live happily and to find his own path to God. So the Seventh Commandment asks us to respect that, to respect private property, to respect the needs of others, and to respect the fact that creation is whole and it's integral and that God meant it to be that way. Fundamental teaching of the church in all of its social doctrine and the great social body of social teaching of the church, those are the things that are emphasized over and over and over again. And when we talk about the topics of economic activity and social justice, these are the same principles that come into play, that we should see that the goods of society are distributed equitably, but at the same time that we don't simply give to people who don't work for those things, that we encourage and teach people how to work. Work is when a person exercises and fulfills their potential, and when that potential is returned in creativity and returned in goods, and when those goods that a person makes are distributed to others and they receive remuneration for those and they receive the goods that other people make, that's the way society is supposed to be. And that in economic life, the Catechism acknowledges that there are different interests involved and that there are always going to be conflicts of interest, and the different interests that governments and businesses and different sectors of the economy have are going to often be in conflict. But the church emphasizes here that the way to resolve those conflicts is by negotiation. And it emphasizes that there must be justice and solidarity among nations, that the rich are responsible for the poor, and we should always be on the outlook to make sure that people and nations that are poor will be given what they need to be able to survive, but will also be taught the skills that they need in order to be able to achieve for themselves within the society. The Seventh Commandment, the Church reminds us in the Catechism, asks us to love the poor, and it reminds us of a great tradition that has always existed within the Church, the corporal and spiritual works of mercy, that we have as our responsibility to help those who are in need, and indeed to love those who are in need, and in helping them also to teach them how to care for themselves and to make a contribution to society. So when it talks about stealing, the Catechism doesn't just relate that to I won't take your money or I won't take your property, but it talks about the whole social structure of humanity and how we are responsible for each other, how we need to respect each other, and how we need to not blow each other off the face of the earth when we have conflicts, but rather we need to negotiate. Well, you see, that's the kind of thing that can come down into our marriages and into our ordinary business life, isn't it? Because we may not be talking so much about physical goods, but we may be talking about opinions and points of view sometimes, and the ownership that we can have about those. And if I get to the point where if you disagree with me, I just want to blow you off the face of the earth, or I treat you badly or shabbily, or won't speak to you, or scream at you, or denigrate you, in a way, that could be a violation of the seventh commandment, whatever else it's a violation of. Because what's happening is I am holding on to my opinion in a way that that is really unfair. And I'm denigrating you and yours. And I'm robbing you of the ability to be fully alive, and I'm robbing myself of that as well. The seventh commandment calls us to negotiation. It invites us to settle our differences and settle our conflicts by working them through prayer and through the reason that God has given us and through the sense of fairness that we need to commit ourselves to. The eighth commandment is the one about bearing false witness against our neighbor, and the church reminds us here that God is the source of all truth and that part of our responsibility is to bear witness to the truth. And here the church holds up the example of martyrdom, because a martyr is the person who in an ultimate way really bears witness to the truth and holds up the truth, because the martyr is the one who gives his or her own life for the truth. Now, the church acknowledges here in the Catechism, interestingly enough, that the right of communication of the truth is not unconditional. We don't have to bear all of our truth, all of our life, to everyone. There are some truths, and maybe even many truths of our lives, that not everyone has the right or the need to know. But we do need to be people who live the truth, and we need to be people who look at the natural law, we look at the eternal law, who look at the law of God, and who realize that this is the truth. This is the truth that is to be lived, and it's the truth that's to be told. And the eighth commandment really invites us to be people of the truth, to be people who make that the focus of our lives. The Catechism also mentions the use of the media, the use of social communication, that it should be at the service of the common good, and that it should tell the truth, and that it should uplift. And that also the church includes the arts here. It has a section on truth, beauty, and sacred art, which says that the joy and the splendor of beauty is something that really should be communicated and should be encouraged in our cultures. The very great importance of sacred art, that the arts should indeed reflect the beauty of God and should be encouraged and should be promoted and should be allowed to have their expression within a society. And one of the important reasons for that the Catechism emphasizes is that truth is beautiful in itself. The ninth commandment is thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's goods, and it includes the notion of purity, because fundamentally this is the notion of purification of the heart, purification of the soul and heart of each of us, that whether we're talking about someone else's spouse or whether we're talking about someone else's property, or whatever it is we're talking about, we are talking about a purification which allows a sense of what the right commitments are and a sense of right ownership of property and right relationship with persons. And the church tells us in terms of the ninth commandment that when we're talking about covetousness with regard to the act of love, that it's our gifts of chastity that we should be thinking about. Chastity is a gift. Having the right intentions about how to deal with creatures and how to use creatures is a gift. We are encouraged to battle for purity, to have a purity of intention, a purity of vision. The church encourages us here to prayer. That's the only way we're going to keep our eyes clean, the eyes of our hearts and the eyes of our souls. That's the only way we're going to do it, is to stay close to prayer, because if we lose prayer, what do we lose? That's right, we lose our link with God. So in the Ninth Commandment and the Tenth Commandment, too, where we're talking about covetousness, sexual covetousness, and the covetousness of goods, we are talking certainly about concupiscence of the flesh in both cases, but we're positively talking about the gift of purity. And purity is something that really includes our sexuality, but it transcends it, because it goes right to how I use all the creatures in the world. In fact, goes right to the question of how I use and how I view the world itself. Because, you see, if I use and utilize the world, and if I view the world as building up to be the body of Christ, then how can I abuse it? How can I abuse the creatures of the world, make them what they were not meant to be, make them be used for what they were not meant to be, and how can I abuse the gift of sexuality? So what the church is calling us to here in its analysis of both the Ninth and Tenth Commandments is to purification of the heart. And really, when it comes right down to it, it's fitting, isn't it, that these are the last two commandments, because that's what all the commandments are really about, isn't it? Purifying our hearts, getting our relationships right, realizing that we are made in the image and likeness of God, and getting our relationship with God right, so that we adore Him above all things, that we use His name in the way it's meant to be used, so that we carve out a little time each day, each week, to honor Him, and that we honor our authorities, and we utilize our gifts of sexuality and our other gifts of human expression, our gifts of truth, our gifts of love, our ability to use the earth. All of those things we use, we utilize as people made in the image of God, as people who, in the deepest sense of the Beatitudes that Jesus gave us so that we could be happy, are the blessed people who are pure of heart.
Thank you for joining us today for the Spirituality of the Catholic Church with Father Paul Keenan. You may write to Father Keenan in care of the Office of Communications, Diocese of New York, 1011 First Avenue, New York, New York, 10022.